it's not the latest episode that we were hoping to be recording for the Old Purple Dinosaur podcast, but, you know, here we are. Here we are. Your trusty Colorado Rockies podcast, nonetheless, with episode number 119 being, sadly, a season wrap-up edition of the Old PDP. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And your Colorado Rockies falling in the National League wild card game to the Arizona Diamondbacks with an 11-7 final. That's how it ended, right? I was so furious. I think I just flew into a blind rage.
I don't think so. I don't think that was the actual final score.
I don't even remember. But you know, whatever.
It was
11-8.
Oh, it was 11-8.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's right. They scored. They scored what would have been the tying run. That's right. Ah, I know what the score was. I just don't want to think about it ever again. You know, so the season ends a little bit prematurely, but then at least, you know, in the long-standing moral scope of things, at least the D-backs went on and made it a series against the Dodgers. That was good to see.
Yeah, no, it was great to see they put up a really, really tough fight.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was, you know, if you were going to lose to a team, you wanted to lose to a team that was going to go on and at least give the division champs a run for their money. You know, I mean, it was you. That was really what you had in mind.
And on a team of stars, you really wanted to see the guys show up. Guys like Daniel Descalso.
Right.
Jeff Mathis.
Exactly. So, you know, you figured, you know, 9-5, 8-5, 3-1 would be the losses for the team that you lost to in the wild card game, and they get swept out of the first round. That's kind of what you figured, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the very least, the Rockies can hang their heads high and knowing that they lost in the wild card game to a team that was totally on the up and up and not doing anything subversive whatsoever.
Right.
And then went on to the next round and then played really, really well.
Against a
team that you probably could have done at the very least the same thing that they did.
Right, right. No, it's, you know, it was just good to see, really. Just good to see all that.
All around good to see. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, at least nothing held back from the old Arizona Diamondbacks in that first round sweep at the hands of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Great series there. Great series.
Great series.
Great stuff.
Good job.
Entertaining baseball to watch. You know, it was great. Well, and like, you know, yesterday, you look at that final score and you're like, 3-1 must have been a good one.
Nope.
That game took 3 hours to get through six innings.
Did you watch that game?
Zach Greinke looked awful. Yeah, like it wasn't even an entertaining close game.
I mean, none of these games have been
No, that's true.
Entertaining. They've all been slogs, man. Look, trust me, I've watched every single damn game.
Yeah, they really have.
I've been working 16-hour days doing this for this first round for the ALDS, and they have not been fun or interesting games.
Yeah.
Like, fun, whatever. There's obviously drama there. It's playoff baseball. I get it. But, like, every single game is 3.5 hours plus, and it does not need to be.
No. And that, you know, I get it. I get the new school bullpenning crew that's very excited about the fact this is the way that pitching staffs are being managed and yada yada. I do find it very funny that Brian Kenny followed us on Twitter and then like immediately unfollowed us. But
no, I don't blame him.
I don't either. But like this is what happens. Like these games are insufferably long, and I don't know. Let's tackle some topics first before we get into the playoff scenarios at large. And we'll talk about the whole bullpenning thing and all that. We'll talk about, you know, the thing that turned into a Justin Verlander, Chris Sale matchup yesterday, which, you know, it ends up working out for the Astros. It was a little bit odd. I don't know. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Rocky season as a whole. So maybe some free agency discussion, who is going, who is staying perhaps. Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's talk about that wild card game. The Rockies squeaked their way into the postseason, just didn't have one more charge or one more defensive stand left in them, and they let the margin get too big in the bottom of the eighth, can't come back from it in the top of the ninth, and they lose an 11-8 final to the Arizona Diamondbacks in the National League wild card game. The story that came out of that the next day, we had actually made a joke on Twitter
during the game
about the possibility that the D-backs were stealing signs via an Apple Watch Now, our joke was related to the fact that there were just pigeons hanging out in right field for like the first four innings of the game, which was strange enough in itself. And I tweeted, how do we know these pigeons aren't sending signals to an Apple Watch in the dugout? And
because
then,
the Red Sox had been caught earlier this season in a series with the Yankees doing something along those lines. And they got fined and whatever.
And then the next day, it came out through the New York Daily News or the New York Post or whoever, that Major League Baseball was investigating the Arizona Diamondbacks for Ariel Prieto wearing an Apple Watch in the dugout during the National League wildcard game. The assistant coach / interpreter on the D-back staff for Torrey Lovello, that was an actual investigation that was going on. We said it was a joke. Turned out to not be a joke. I think it was Joel Sherman, so I think it was the New York Post.
Yeah, it was.
And Sherman posted a picture of Prieto very obviously wearing an Apple Watch. This was the statement from Major League Baseball after a full comprehensive 24-hour investigation. Quote, Major League Baseball has completed its inquiry into the matter of the watch worn by Arizona Diamondbacks coach / interpreter Ariel Prieto in the dugout during the National League wildcard game on Wednesday night at Chase Field. The inquiry was conducted by MLB's Department of Investigations, and the findings were submitted to Baseball Commissioner Robert D. Manfred Jr. MLB forensically examined Mr. Prieto's Apple Watch and his cell phone and interviewed Mr. Prieto. MLB found no evidence that Mr. Prieto used the Apple Watch or cell phone for any purpose in the dugout, nor in any baseball-related communication on either device during Wednesday's game. Despite these findings, Mr. Prieto violated MLB's on-field regulation by having this device in the dugout. As a result, he and the D-backs have each been fined an undisclosed amount. The amount of the fines will be in turn donated by the Office of the Commissioner to hurricane relief efforts in Puerto Rico.
Sure. Okay.
Here are my thoughts. It's fun to get fired up about this. That's my overriding emotion, was like, A, I don't think they were actually stealing signs. B, even if they were stealing signs, the likelihood and the practicality that you're able to steal signs and get something from an observer somewhere to somebody with an Apple Watch in the dugout to a batter between pitches is virtually impossible. But C, the Yankees-Red Sox investigation took a considerable amount of time and resulted in pretty significant financial penalties for the Red Sox. Major League Baseball investigated this in 24 hours, and maybe it is just as simple as they looked at forensic evidence and something showed like, oh yeah, it was on airplane mode that entire time. That's possible. It just seemed a little strange that it was like the next afternoon they were like, ah, never mind, it wasn't anything.
Well, and this is all so stupid too, because I don't even get how you could necessarily use an Apple Watch to relay things in real time to players as they're on the field. I mean, well, we've tried to figure out, like, when the second came out with the Red Sox this year, we tried to figure it out with our whip around crew, because one of our guys had an Apple Watch, about just the amount of time it would take for you to relay something to someone who would then in turn relay it to somebody else. And there's nothing you can really do.
No.
I'm not even sure how you could relay stealing signs with an Apple Watch, whatever. And the point is, everyone coming up in our mentions saying that stealing signs has been part of baseball forever. Yeah, sure, okay, fine. But like, if it has explicitly been said, hey, you cannot do this one thing.
Right.
And then they do that one thing.
This isn't as simple,
No, like, and let's play devil's advocate. Let's say that that the D-backs were stealing signs and the Apple Watch was somehow working super effectively.
Right.
The D-backs, let's just say they used that knowledge and won the game. They advanced in the playoffs. They got one more gate of revenue for their team with the playoff game yesterday, and they only ended up being one, so, you know, because they couldn't win a game. Let's just say that. So you used the information that you stole. You used it to go on in the playoffs, and the commissioner's office just says, "Oh, give us $20,000.
Yeah, we'll just donate it."
And then it's it, and then it's over.
Yeah,
and everybody forgets about it. Like, how is that a decent enough punishment? Like, how does the punishment match the crime?
No, at all. I'm with
Because the D-backs, in their case, like, oh, we got what we wanted.
Right.
We're good.
That's the thing. And we were kind of having that conversation. Like, it's cheating in modern sports is worth it because the ramifications don't come out until much later, you know, after they've already affected things on the field of play. Even in college football or college basketball, Yeah, you can force a team to vacate a championship, quote unquote. Nobody thinks that Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman. Exactly. Nobody thinks that Kentucky didn't win a national championship. Like, none of that stuff.
None of that stuff matters.
No.
This is a good point. Like, you know, is it the point of cheating? Cheaters always prosper in professional sports.
Right.
Like, I talked with Eric Karros a lot about this during our whip around name drop, and he played in the steroid era, obviously.
Yeah.
He said he never took any steroids, and I believe him in that regard. He just played in Denver a lot, and he beat the Rockies all the time because hashtag Coors. But he's always made the point, like, would you rather be me, Eric Karros, who had like a very, very nice career,
right,
not a Hall of Famer, but a very, very nice career,
right,
made a decent amount of money and is now working on television? Or would you rather be someone like a Shane Spencer, who had like a flash in the pan, won three World Series, and like then got busted for steroids, something along those lines?
Right.
I think Spencer might not even be like the perfect example, but like just a guy who came up, you know, got busted for steroids, but won a couple of World Series, and then now you're good to go.
Yeah.
You know, like who would you rather be? Would you rather be a guy who won a couple World Series, or Eric Karros, who had a nice career and is now doing TV, but never won a World Series? Because like, you know, he knows all those guys that he played with. They got busted, but he knows what they were doing the entire time they were doing it.
Right. Right.
But there was no recourse or no punishment that was actually fit the crime for all those guys who actually were doing steroids in that time.
Right.
Even now, like, you get busted once, it's 80 games, but then you come back and you can still get your contracts. You can still, you know, not that you're playing the playoffs. Next year you can still play in the playoffs if your team makes it. Like, it's just, you know, there's no real detriment to guys who really want to go for it anymore. Now it's better than it was, but even when it first started,
right,
there was nothing there to deter guys from doing it.
The thing I always think too is not even so much in that like last step of a career, like going from good to great. I think if you're like, you know, you're a cusp quadruple A type of player, like you're a guy who's barely hanging on in an organization and somebody's coming to take your job and it's the only livelihood you have, and maybe you were a high school prospect who was drafted and you haven't really had the career that you wanted, you haven't made a ton of money, didn't get a college degree, don't know what you're going to do after playing baseball, and the temptation is there, you know, I wouldn't want to be in that situation where you have to decide one way or another. And the point is not to discuss PEDs. The point is to discuss the moral framework around making a decision to cheat. Do I think the D-backs were cheating? No, I don't. Do I think that it's fun and sort of hilarious to get fired up and troll the D-backs on Twitter by advanced searching for the words Apple and Watch in their tweets and then retweeting things?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I think that's hysterical.
Yeah.
I do, you know, you made the point. People in our mentions that were like, stealing signs is as old as baseball. Yeah, cheating is as old as humanity. Does that make it okay? No. And the point is, and Ryan Freemeyer jumped in and made this point. The point is not that they were stealing signs. The point is the way in which they were stealing signs, which A, has been explicitly banned by Major League Baseball this year, B, resulted in a team being fined heavily by Major League Baseball this year, and C, that team is the front office that spawned the entire D-backs front office and coaching staff. Everybody on the D-backs side came from the Boston Red Sox this year. And it just so happens that the Boston Red Sox are the team that got popped for this earlier in the season. Do I think that there's something malicious going on? No. This is like the Seinfeld episode where the guy asks himself questions and then he answers them. Do I wish Beth and I would get back together? Absolutely. But the thing is, it's not the point that they were stealing signs, is the way in which they were allegedly stealing signs. I don't think they were, but the fact that there is a point to be had, a discussion to be had over it, that's the message. That's the reason. The ironic thing is sort of, you were better off in the analog era trying to steal signs. I mean, everybody talks about the shot heard around the world and Bobby Thompson and the fact that the Giants were stealing the signs from the Dodgers for God knows how long during the end of that season. That is the most infamous now discussion when it comes to stealing signs, is the 1951 season. The Giants, supposedly, if you don't know the story, had a guy with a telescope. The weird thing about the Polo Grounds, among many weird things, is that the clubhouses were located in dead center field. They were in a the players had to walk over the field to get to the clubhouses and to get to the dugouts and vice versa.
Which was like 900 feet away from home plate.
Center field of the Polo Grounds was like 530 feet away. Yeah. Not even hyperbole. And there was supposedly, and there is photographic evidence that backs this up, as well as people who have now, you know, made it known. They've come forward and confessed. But the Giants had a clubhouse employee who cut a hole out of a window, put a telescope there, observed signs, would relay via a signal system what was coming to the Giants relievers in the bullpen, and based on where a towel was placed, the relievers would signal to the hitter what pitch was coming up. So if the towel was over a guy's shoulder, it was a fastball. The towel was on the bench, it was a breaking pitch, something like that.
Well, yeah, it was just like in the Sky Dome.
Right.
Like people in the hotel, they would have signs or whatever. Yeah.
And that's easier. You know what I mean? Like it's way more difficult to relay it through an intermediary. Unless hitters are going up with earpieces, like you're not getting anything out of an Apple Watch.
When you were in Little League, when you'd be like, you know, hey, first name fastball,
exactly.
Second name
breaking ball, or I'll yell your name for a changeup. I'll yell your number for a fastball. Exactly. That type of thing. So I don't think that there was anything going on in terms of sign stealing. However, and this applies to the Red Sox and not to the D-backs, because the investigation was too quick. It seemed there wasn't really a whole lot of – there wasn't anything that came out that was like, oh, look at when Prieto looks at his watch, then look at what happens with this third base coach, then look at what happens with the hitter, whatever. Like, there wasn't any of that. With the Red Sox, though, and I had an American League scout phrase it to me this way, they had to be getting something out of it. Otherwise, why risk it? And that I agree with. And obviously Major League Baseball found wrongdoing there. There was a punishment levied and that was that. But to just give our thoughts on it, I don't think the D-backs are doing anything surreptitious, but I also think that this is a growing concern in baseballs that this kind of stuff is going to happen a lot.
And you look at the approaches that the D-backs had against every single Rockies pitcher, they were comfy in that game.
Yeah, that was a little bit suspicious.
So, and listen, John Gray did not have a very good game.
No,
he only got four outs. He gave up four runs, seven hits. He gave up that home run to Goldie on that hanging curveball in the first inning.
Not good.
For whatever reason, John Gray decided to try to attack the D-backs with his third best pitch just like constantly.
Yeah, which was strange.
It was very strange. He threw 41 pitches in that time, which is wonderful.
Right.
In the third. But it was clear that he just didn't have it. Now, he had his velocity. He was throwing helmet another 97, 98 most of the time.
Yeah.
And his fastball looked great, and he probably should have stayed with that. But he went with his curveball way too many times, and the D-backs were right on it pretty much from the get-go.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the hits that the D-backs got in that game, a lot of them, the Rockies pitchers were ahead in the count. 0-2, 1-2, even 2-2. It was either a very poorly executed game by the Rockies, which is totally possible, or the D-backs had a little bit of a leg up.
Right.
Because John Gray had looked absolutely dominant against the D-backs this year. He looked filthy coming down the stretch. We did not foresee this coming from a guy like John Gray.
Right.
In this game.
Yeah. No, I completely
agree. He'll be back. He'll be fine. It was an aberration for the most part for John Gray this season, especially in the second half of the year. But it was an odd choice of pitch selection for John Gray in that game that he tried to consistently go with his third, even fourth best pitch at times.
That is true. And it was obvious that that was a plan that was conceived. It wasn't like John Gray was just there shaking off his fastball. That was obviously something that was discussed and planned for prior to that start. But it did seem a little bit strange. And we heard John Gray last week prior to that game talk about how he pitches a little bit differently at Coors Field versus what he does on the road. It didn't line up with what we saw from him the second half of the season. And you know what? That could be very well due to the fact that John Gray is 25 years old. He's in his second full major league season. He was making his first playoff appearance. It's not easy. And just because John Gray has been really damn good doesn't mean that he is immune to going out, being a little bit too overhyped, leaving breaking balls up. Like, that happens. And it especially happens when you're 25 and you're making your first playoff appearance. But you and I were texting after the game, And our point was sort of, this is the type of game that you want the Rockies to look back in 2018 and say, this is what we learned from that game in 2017. That's why we're here now. That's right. Why we're contending for a division title. That's why we're contending for a pennant, whatever it is. That's what you have to be able to build on from this. That's the, I mean, that's this is, the biggest thing.
Right. And the tough thing with Gray that, you know, he threw about 13% curveballs this year. I mean, he threw almost 25% curves in that game. Oh. He got the D-backs swung at 10 breaking pitches, only got one swing and miss. And that's John Gray's thing with his breaking pitches, that he's usually very good at that, at getting swings and misses from his pitches. Like he threw got seven swings on his curveball. They connected with every single one of them.
God.
Like he got all these 16 swings on his fastball, got four whiffs. Like that's four of his five swings and misses he got were on his fastball, because his fastball was
looked
from
94 good.
To 98.
It looked really good.
Averaging 97 with his fastball in that game. Just like,
with movement too. I mean, that thing, like, yeah. I think the angrier that John Gray gets, the better that fastball is. And he was great. Angry for a lot of that game. And, you know, it was just, you kind of could tell it very much felt like the snap over Peyton Manning's head on the first play of Super Bowl 48. You know what I mean? Like, it just kind of felt like, well,
a little bit.
Here it goes. You know, but yeah. The difference was the Broncos never made a game out of that. The Rockies came back in this one, and that was the biggest thing. And we were talking about that too that night. The fear became they're going to get boat raced out of this building. You know, the fear became it's going to be an 11-1 loss. This is going to be a humiliation. And it wasn't. They chased Zach Greinke in the fourth. They come back. They make it. They go from a 6-0 deficit to a 6-5 deficit. Then from an 8-5 deficit to an 8-7 deficit. So they rally. We used the analogy a few weeks ago in reference to the playoff race of cycling, of, you know, in the Tour de France, when somebody breaks, everybody has to chase them down. The Rockies were able to chase down the D-backs twice in that game and make it a very manageable deficit. They just couldn't hold the line. And, you know, I tweeted out after the game, that's the type of game that young teams lose. And it is. But the thing that's frustrating is it wasn't the young guys who blew it. You know, John Gray, John Gray put him in a bit of a hole, but it was all the veterans.
Pat Neshek pitched very poorly.
And was brilliant after the acquisition. Was brilliant. Pat Neshek had a fantastic year. And then, serves up one pitch to Archie Bradley. And Archie Bradley is a phenomenal athlete. I will take nothing away from Archie Bradley. He's also a National League relief pitcher who had like two hits all season. You can't. And there was a two-strike, two-out count.
I will say that that moment will forever be burned on my mind.
Yeah.
Archie Bradley's triple.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to be like, oh, you know, like, you know, there are so many things happening in a game, whatever. No, that one has stuck with me the entire week.
Yeah.
Like that one, I'm not going to forget that one ever.
Yeah.
That's, that could be one of like the lowest moments like I've felt as a Rockies fan.
Yeah.
Seeing like, you're so close, you have a chance.
Yep.
And the next thing he comes out and gives up back-to-back homers, which would have tied the game.
And the momentum is all yours. Lead at that point. Right. The momentum was all yours, you know? I mean, the Rockies, the D-backs are on their heels.
You just had to get out a National League relief pitcher, and you're Pat Neshek, who had an ERA in, like, the low twos this year. Like,
how did that happen?
And, no, that's one moment that is forever going to be burned on my mind. That's like the Brewer scoring three runs on a wild pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not fun either.
That's like Andrew Toll's grand slam.
Yeah, like the Ryan Howard homer.
Ryan Howard homer.
Yeah,
fucking Houston Street.
Houston Street.
That's it. That's always gonna be there.
Yeah,
be there for, like that's that one hurt.
Yeah.
That one really really hurt.
Yeah, and that's, you know, if it had been Scott Oberg, you'd think to yourself, like, all right, young guy, he's been shaky at times.
By the way,
Scott Oberg was a hero. Yeah.
He struck out Goldschmidt and Martinez when the game was teetering on the brink.
People really, you know, Scott Oberg has become a very convenient whipping boy. And for many reasons, that's been accurate at times this year. Scott Oberg, though, in September, made 13 appearances, put up an ERA of 2.25. He struck out 13 in 12 innings. And Scott Oberg is throwing like 101 miles an hour now? Like, when the hell did that happen?
He threw eight pitches to Paul Goldschmidt and JD Martinez. Seven of them were fastballs, and he got four swings and misses.
Like, Scott Oberg looked really damn good.
He got as many swings and misses as John Gray did at 41 pitches. Scott Oberg got them in eight.
God almighty. I mean, it was frustrating as hell, but it was, there are a lot of positives to take out of it. And moreover, the season as a whole gives you a ton of positives to take out of it. And the funny thing was on, during the wild card game, all of us, I think, had this mindset of like, you know what? They made it this far. Doesn't even matter if they win the wild card game. Season's still a success. And then you just
which is true.
And now looking back at it, especially during the game, you wanted blood so badly. Like when
that
it
game was so, so winnable.
Yeah, that's exactly the term. It was such a winnable game.
Yeah.
And you wanted them to make it out. You wanted them to be playing game four tonight in Denver, you know, like it. Well, not really, because you wanted them to sweep the Dodgers in three, but they had it. I mean, that was there. That was a game to be won. You score eight runs in a ball game, more often than not, you're going to win. But you know, you can't give up 11. And that was the brutal thing. And I don't fault Bud Black for going to John Gray at all. I don't fault John Gray for having a bad day. Everybody has bad days. That's what happens.
Greinke had a bad day
a lot when push came to shove for the D-backs this year. Maybe not so much this year as last year, but you know, Zach Greinke is no longer the Zach Greinke of old, and John Gray is a guy who's coming into his own, and there are going to be these days for young pitchers. You wish that they wouldn't have happened in a postseason game, but they did.
Your guys in your lineup came up. I mean, like, Nolan hit a home run. Story hit a homer. Luke hit a couple doubles.
Cargo got things started against Greinke.
Cargo got a couple of hits. But, like, you know, Charlie and DJ combined to go 0-for-9 with three strikeouts, you know?
Ugh. Yeah, Charlie and DJ, that – DJ
they had rough games.
DJ had a brutal day, and really just, like, it was one of the first times where you saw DJ come to the plate and thought, nah, I don't really have any confidence in this situation.
No.
You know, like, it just did not feel like the – and I think it's because DJ was such an oddity to people for so long that nobody really took him seriously. It was like, yeah, we need to shift against this guy. We need to work him inside, try to force him to pull a ball. We need to do all this stuff. But DJ's numbers declined precipitously as the season went on. He went from a 929 OPS in July to 833 in August to 762 in September. And that's going to happen. You know, people are going to adjust. But it was just, man, when they needed Chuck and DJ to come through in that game, it was just not in the offense.
It was not great.
It was not great. So the themes that come out of this are still positives. We said since the start of this podcast in 2014 that really 2016, 2017 were going to be the windows opening for the Rockies, and that you hope 2018 through 2020 and maybe beyond, this is a team that really competes for a while for a lot of good stuff. And I think we saw that. You know, I think there are some very crucial decisions coming up as to what this team looks like in 2018 and beyond. But this was, I think, the big step that the Rockies needed. And, you know, they hung in. They were in contention for a while in 2016 under Walt Weiss. They figured out that Walt Weiss wasn't going to be the guy to take them over the line. They go out. They get a manager like Bud Black. They play extraordinarily good baseball the first half of the season, fall off a little bit in the second half. But hey, you build up that bulwark against the teams behind you and you make the playoffs. That's the whole point. So they made the playoffs. They have a bad night from a starter. They get knocked out. But you can't look at 2017 and not feel like it was a very positive season. Are you disappointed in how it ended? Of course you are. But you can't look at it as anything other than a positive year.
Because that's what it was. It was one of the more memorable seasons in Rockies history because they really did lead from wire to wire for the most part. Like I said, almost every day of the entire season in a playoff spot. They've never done that before in their entire franchise history. You're seeing the young players develop before your eyes. You saw Charlie Blackman turn into a superstar this year. Nolan Arenado could be a legitimate MVP candidate. He might win it this year. We'll see come next month. But you saw all the right steps being taken from the people you need them to be taken from. Yeah. It was the starting pitchers were able to get their feet wet at the big league level and have a lot of success. Your Herman Marquez, Kyle Freeland, John Gray, of course, Senzatella, Hoffman. Like, these guys are going to be your stalwarts going forward. And they were able to experience a modicum of success or even a little bit better than that at certain points throughout the season. You're going to need them to build on that confidence coming up in the next year, two, three, and probably beyond. I mean, Tyler Anderson came back.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to be your number two Looked starter great. This year. Had a very tough first half, got hurt, came back, and he was lights out down the stretch. So you have a lot of guys you can count on for next year and a pretty decent base to build them from. You got a couple of questions about free agents next year. Who are you going to bring in? Who are you going to count on next year? The question of David Dahl is still going to be well debated over the offseason, how well he's going to be if and when he ever comes back. But it will be an even year next year. So next year he should be probably win the MVP, because that's kind of how David Dahl works. He either wins the MVP of his respective league or he gets hurt for the entire season.
Yep.
And it really does go every other year.
Yep.
So there's no way you can look at this and at this the end of the season and make a broad stroke judgment about how the rest of the year went just right. because how about the season ended. That's right. dumb. That's really stupid. And that's not how baseball works. Baseball doesn't work like that. Baseball is such a long grind that you have to look at it from a macro perspective, and you have to be able to see the forest for the trees when it comes to judging how a baseball season went. The Rockies are not a successful team most of the time. In their franchise history, they've been pretty much down there at the bottom in almost every single year that they've played since 1993. This year, they made the playoffs. That's always the goal for the Rockies. Make the playoffs. That's what they did. That's a success.
Yep.
That's a successful season.
And to do it in a year in which you had a starting rotation comprised almost entirely of first and second year guys, and to do it when you had really, for the majority of the season, two black holes in your lineup in Cargo and in Trevor Story until you needed them most when they finally started to get it going, which was huge, and it's big for both of those guys. It's almost more impressive than just a team that wins 87 games and makes the playoffs. I just want to point this out. In our season preview episode, I called for them to go 87-75, and they went 87-75. That would be impressive enough on its own. But the fact that, like, you had to rely, you know, you didn't have Chad Bettis for the first three plus months of the season, and you felt like he was going to be an anchor and the veteran guy who held your rotation together, and then you didn't have him. John Gray missed the first month and a half of the year, really. I mean, he was injured so early on, it felt like he was gone for the first 2 months of the season. So then you have to go behind a rotation of, you know, Tyler Anderson missed considerable time. So you're going behind a rotation of like four rookies, and you're mixing in Tyler Chatwood every once in a while. And the Rockies, from an injury standpoint and a youth standpoint, really had no business being where they were this year, and they still were. And not only were they still there, they held off a very talented and similarly young team in the Brewers. They held off a much more veteran and expensive team in the Cardinals. And they were in the race in the division until the middle part of the summer, and they were in the race to win the top wild card spot until late August. That's big. Those are big, tangible steps. So sure it's a good big year this year, 2017.
I agree.
Good. Then we're all
completely agree.
Then we're all in agreement.
Cool.
All
in agreement.
We're all in agreement. So let's discuss some possible movers and shakers and returners and departers who will enter free agency in the 2017 offseason. The Rockies will look at this group as free agents going into the 2018 season. Closer Greg Holland, right fielder Carlos Gonzalez, catcher Jonathan Lucroy, relief pitcher Pat Neshek, relief pitcher Jake McGee, first baseman Mark Reynolds, starting pitcher / relief pitcher Tyler Chatwood, and catcher Ryan Hannigan. Few guys you can rule out right off the bat. Tyler Chatwood's not coming back. Ryan Hannigan is not coming back. Of those other guys, I think there's a case that everybody returns. I don't think it's a likely case, but I think it's a possibility. And I think there's a case that maybe you get one or two of those guys back. I think the Rockies going into 2018 are going to be content to see Mark Reynolds walk unless he is amiable to coming back on a cheap minor league type of contract again.
Like he did this year.
Like he did this year, which is possible.
Reynolds had an awesome season, by the way. Probably the best minor league deal any team signed this season.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, Mark Reynolds came out. This year, Mark Reynolds came out and had one of the best years of his career. Yeah. He had 30 homers, drove in 97, and 839 OPS.
You know, come on. And slumped in the second half, but he carried the weight so much in the first half that you could forgive an adjustment to his strengths in the second half. Before the All-Star break, he slashed 284, 379, 513. It was an 892 OPS. 243, 314, 449 after the All-Star break. 19 homers and 61 driven in before. 36 homers and 11 homers and 36 runs driven in after. You know, that's going to happen. Guys adjust to strengths and weaknesses, whatever.
And still, he's also Mark Reynolds.
And you paid him $1.5 million. Like, you can handle a 243, 314, 449 slash line from a guy that you're paying the major league minimum.
And he's 34.
And he's 34
He's been
only
for a long time. You know what Mark Reynolds
exactly.
is.
Exactly. So, you know, I think he and the Rockies would probably both be very open to working out a deal like this year, a one-year type of contract. But I also think maybe there are other teams that are willing to risk more on Mark Reynolds than that. The Rockies are probably okay with that. Jake McGee, Pat Neshek, those two guys, I think you would love to see them both back. And one thing that works in your favor with Neshek is he's an older guy, 37 years old. So not a whole lot of teams out there are going to be throwing multiple year deals at Pat Neshek. And it seemed like he felt pretty good about being here, being part of a pennant race and being somebody who could contribute in a place where it's not believed you can contribute. He was very effective at Coors Field. He was really good after the acquisition. Pat Neshek, with the exception of one pitch to Archie Bradley, was everything you wanted him to be when they picked him up. So that's a possibility. Maybe you bring him back on a 1 or 2 year deal at a fairly team friendly money number. Jake McGee this year looked great. 3.61 ERA in 62 games, was healthy, was effective. The velocity back, he looked really good this year. So he's another one that I think would factor into the mix very well. I would love to see them bring Jonathan Lucroy back. That's a guy who, of this group, I think he is the one that is most worth going out and throwing some money after.
Because you don't have a backup
right now. Right,
right. Rockies catchers were a black hole of offense this year. Tony Wolters really regressed both offensively and defensively. Tommy Murphy, I have no idea what happened to him this year.
And was dominant. Well. Dominant in AAA toward the end of the year. And then he gets called up at the beginning of September and got four at-bats. He got one start. And four at-bats the entire time. And actually, no, it was not a start. He came in late and didn't even get an at-bat against the Padres on September 16th. Why? Which I do understand. You're in a playoff race. You acquired a guy to be your number one. Lucroy obviously is going to get the nods. Maybe the Rockies just didn't feel comfortable handing the reins off. If the Rockies were not in contention, I think Tom Murphy gets a long look down the stretch. And it does make sense that in September, you're not going to hand a lot of at-bats away. But Tom Murphy this year at AAA was one of the best bats, which last year was similar. But this year, I mean, really looked like a guy who kind of was starting to get it figured out again.
They clearly don't see him in the same way that we do. As an organization. But they need someone like Jonathan Lucroy with this team. Yeah. I mean, he's a veteran presence, a great defender. He should bounce back offensively. He did pretty well. Late, not where he was maybe last year when he was an all-star, but or 2 years ago when he was an all-star. But he's got the ability. He's only 31. Bringing him back on a maybe a 2-3 year deal, there's a lot of worse places they could go. But I think they need Jonathan Lucroy in this lineup, to be honest. And then it comes to the big dog, Carlos Gonzalez.
Yeah.
What the hell do the Rockies do with Carlos Gonzalez?
Yeah.
One of the best players in franchise history. Finally started sleeping in September and obviously played better. Did you see that story?
No.
That's why he played better?
Huh.
And so apparently he was just like, oh, you know, I was really tired a lot. Day games would really be hard because I would come home and go to bed at like 3 or 4 in the morning and then wake up at 8.
What?
And then I started trying to go to bed like at 11 or midnight when I got home, black out the windows, and I would sleep 8 hours, and I'd wake up, and I would feel refreshed and better, and I'd be like, oh, wow, I feel great.
What?
And that was literally like in conjunction with him starting to hit better.
How on earth did I not hear that? That is, it was, who would have thought that sleep is what rejuvenates the body?
Not getting 4 hours of sleep a night.
Interesting.
For a professional athlete.
Huh. Well, that is
something. Who would have thought? Whom would have thought?
Whom would have thought? There was a story that came out in late August that the Rockies did offer Carlos Gonzalez a contract extension. We heard, of course, back during the spring, there were no discussions. The Rockies had no interest in bringing him back. There was a big conspiracy theory about how they weren't talking to him about a deal, whatever. Cargo did confirm in late August that he was offered an extension. The report was that it was for 4 years. He said that it was not, but either way, he turned it down and now is going to be a free agent. He turned it down and then turned in the worst season of his career. Did look a whole hell of a lot better after the All-Star break, and that's a big positive. But is this a Garrett Atkins situation in which the Rockies offer big money and a guy turns into a ghost and he turns and leaves and you think to yourself a few years down the road, okay, well, that didn't work out so poorly. The difference is, you know, Cargo was a franchise cornerstone for so long, and so now what do you do with him?
Still only 31.
Yeah.
So
that's a crazy thing. Carlos Gonzalez and Charlie Blackmon are the same age.
Does not make sense.
No, not at all. Charlie Blackmon born July 1st, 1986. Carlos Gonzalez born October 17th, 1985. So they're both 31 years old. Chuck feels like he just broke onto the scene, fresh face. Cargo feels like he's been a veteran since the mid-90s. Like, how in the hell? What?
Like, what, Edwin Jackson's only like 33 or something like that, isn't that right?
And he's played for somehow 35 teams. Major League Baseball teams, even though they're only 30. I don't know. I mean, if you're Jeff Breidich, what do you do?
It's really hard to play it out because of the David Dahl question.
Yeah.
I mean, if David Dahl is healthy, you expect him to be in the lineup every day, and he could be one of those touchstones for this Rockies lineup.
Yep.
If you let Cargo go and David Dahl gets hurt again, all of a sudden your starting lineup every day, your starting outfield is Charlie Blackmon, Gerardo Parra in the third year of a deal, and Raimel Tapia. Do you think Raimel Tapia is an everyday starter?
God, perhaps. I think so, and I would hope so.
But,
you know.
But is he a guy you want to be able to produce big time for a right fielder? I'm not sure.
Right.
I think his offensive profile fits better in left, defensively as well.
Right.
That means Parra's playing right, at least for next season.
Where is he and Desmond playing these days?
Where is he and Desmond playing? Is he going to be just the first baseman next year? Right. Like, that's also not a very good thing going forward for a first base offensive profile for a guy like Ian Desmond, who it's 85% ground balls. It's a big deal, and I'm really not sure how this team wants to go. If you can get him like a 2-year deal for maybe like 10 a year, I don't know, 2 for 20, because, you know, he has to know that he had a tough year. But if you can get him like a 2 for 20 kind of situation, I think you consider it. And then it gives you, if David Dahl is healthy, then it gives you good options in the outfield with Charlie and Gerardo and Cargo and David Dahl. You can kind of mix and match whenever you need to. If that's the four you want to go with Raimel waiting in the wings, that's fine. But I don't think you want to get too much of your payroll for 2018 tied up in Carlos Gonzalez. And it's tough to say because he has been one of the best players in this franchise has ever seen. But man, like, you really can't deal with another year of Cargo being the Cargo that he was this season. You can't do that. No. You can't pay him the $20 million you paid him this year or whatever. You cannot do that again.
I don't know. I don't know how... I don't know how you approach this. I don't know what exactly the qualifying offer circumstances are around Cargo for this year. You know, the Rockies lucked out a few years ago in which they offered a deal, a qualifying offer to Michael Kadire, and then the Mets decided, well, we'll swoop in and sign him to a multi-year contract for a bunch of money, and then he retired a year of the contract. The Rockies got a draft pick out of it.
The Rockies have gotten lucky with some of those the last few seasons. Even the Tulo trade, you know.
Just
they got pretty lucky with that one.
This is a tough one because it's not somebody like Michael Kadire that you think to yourself, like, oh, well, he was fun to have around for a while. We'll see him around sometime.
Like, he was never part of the long-term future.
No, no. And this is a guy who, if Cargo is second half Cargo again, then, yeah, you can use him as a linchpin for a team that can contend for a while. But if he's not, if he's first half Cargo, ugh, then you sure as hell don't want to be dealing with that for multiple years. One thing that I think very much factors into the Rockies' favor is that they do have a lot of dead money that comes off the books, Cargo's salary being part of that. But the biggest chunk, of course, goes to Jose Reyes, which they will not be paying after 2017, and that's fantastic. The Rockies paid Cargo $20.4 million this year. He's obviously not going to be getting that same money going forward. But if you could sign Cargo to a 2 or 3 year contract, and, you know, even if it's Ian Desmond-like money, that's palatable if you're getting the same guy you got in the second half this year. And I think maybe it does work in the Rockies' favor in that the stock really tanked for Cargo in the first half of the season. So maybe he is a little bit more affordable coming back, because I don't think teams are looking at Cargo and thinking, okay, 6 year deal, we're going to offer him nine figures and we're going to bring this guy in, a team that maybe sees a closing window of contention, that type of thing.
Right.
I don't think that is as much of a concern for the Rockies right now as it would have been had Cargo gone out and been second half Cargo for the entire year this year. So basically what I'm saying is, don't be surprised if Carlos Gonzalez is back. We were all very quick to write the epitaph on Cargo's career. I think there's a strong possibility that he figures out a way and the Rockies hammer out a deal to bring him back. And I wouldn't be upset about that. If it's for 5 years, maybe I'd be a little bit concerned, but it's a guy who is a known commodity when he's going good. He's also a known commodity when he struggles, and you have to take that into account with him. But I think they are a better team if they are able to bring him back on friendly terms. You know that you're freeing up a ton of money, not having to pay somebody like the money that you were shelling out for some godforsaken reason to Jose Reyes. They're not paying Jason Mott next year. They're not paying Chad Qualls. They're not paying Jordan Lyles. There are options with Cargo. So,
and Greg Holland has the player option,
right,
too.
Which I would assume
he's
going to opt out.
You would think? He's raised his Q rating,
right,
quite a bit in the last year.
It went from being a mutual option for 2018 to being a player option with his performance this year. The incentives in that deal turn it into a $15 million option for next year for him. I would think he'll probably opt out and test the market on his own. I also don't think, I mean, the reporter at the local newspaper said that more than likely you would see Greg Holland go after a deal this offseason, like we've seen other top market closers like Mark Melancon get. Nobody's given Greg Holland Mark Melancon money. Greg Holland's not getting 4 years and $62 million. I don't think. With his half this year.
Don't be surprised.
And ERA close to 6.5 in the second half.
Don't be shocked if he gets decent, if he gets $50 million next year from somebody.
That's probably true.
Don't be shocked.
I mean, and it is certainly an era that favors closers and relievers in that regard. And I'd be happy for Greg Holland if he did. That's a dude who he should win National League Comeback Player of the Year. Zimmerman's in that conversation. And Eric Thames is in that conversation. Marcus, as I like to call him. Greg Holland certainly he's got a claim to stake to that. He had a hell of a year. I'd be thrilled for Greg Holland if he was a guy who went out and got that type of money. Coming back from the injuries, coming back from Tommy John, that'd be great. Good dude, easy to root for. I think that'd be fantastic. But I also think the Rockies do have a window into signing him back.
Right, right. And the Rockies right now, at this point, have five guaranteed players on their salary for next year.
Right.
Adam Ottavino, Michael Dunn, each with $7 million. Gerardo Parra, $10 million. Nolan Arenado getting paid $17.8 next year. And then Ian Desmond getting paid $22 million next year.
Boy. That is some money.
It ain't my money.
Some money.
But man, does he look fly in those suits, though.
Oh, man. He does. He does look quite good in the suits.
He's still a very handsome man.
So did Ryan Hannigan. He looked like he was having a hell of a lot of fun in every photo the Rockies posted. Ryan Hannigan was photobombing.
I think my favorite tweet about that, seeing Ryan Hannigan come off the bus, I think Rio had it, where he said, the picture of Ryan hanging off the bus, like doing like finger guns at the camera and saying, when you're the only JV player, you get to ride with the varsity.
And somebody else cut him out of that picture and said, coming to steal your girl.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, Ryan Hannigan's probably not going to be back. Tyler Chatwood expressed some displeasure with being moved to the bullpen. He's not going to be back. That's fine. I hope Tyler Chatwood has a great career. Another guy, when he's on, he is a lot of fun to watch. I really like watching Tyler Chatwood. And another guy who, like, Tyler Chatwood's like 5'9". Nothing about him really makes sense. And it's fun to watch him be a good major leaguer. I like normal-sized human beings who are very good at professional sports. I've always enjoyed that. That's why I love Jose Altuve. He's not even normal-sized. He's like a Lilliputian, and he's the best hitter in baseball.
Yeah. He's pint-sized.
Right. He, like, fits in your pocket. He runs on batteries. Those guys, you're okay with seeing go. But of this other group, I would be, if you can bring back four guys out of Greg Holland, Carlos Gonzalez, Jonathan Lucroy, Pat Neshek, Jake McGee, and Mark Reynolds, I think you're thrilled. If you bring back half of those guys, I think you're still pretty thrilled. And you maybe you don't even want to. Yeah. I think Lucroy is a must. I love what Jonathan Lucroy was able to do. If you can get him at an affordable rate, he's a guy who seemed to really like being here. And the quote that I really love that Lucroy gave is, he said, quote, I'm a 31-year-old catcher, so I have to get going. I want a ring or two or three, and I think the opportunity is definitely here for that to happen. That sense of urgency I like a lot. And just a good guy, like an easy gravity for Jonathan Lucroy in that clubhouse. And a down year, the Rockies got him because he was not very productive in the first half. They got him for a very low cost. Coors Field obviously injects some life into a guy like that. But the veteran mindset, the ability to bring on a young, not only pitching staff, but a young group of catchers in Tom Murphy and in Tony Wolters, that's invaluable as well. I mean, that's like a Carson Palmer sitting behind a John Kitna, to borrow a very old, or an Aaron Rodgers sitting behind a Brett Favre, to borrow a very old NFL metaphor.
Or a Ryan Sheely sitting behind a Todd Helton.
Right, exactly. I mean, the real legends of the game, like Ryan Sheely.
Joe Kochanski sitting behind Ryan Sheely, sitting behind Todd Helton.
You know, I think that would be huge. And I would love to see Neshek and McGee back. But the rest of them, you know, I think the Rockies are going to be okay. This is not a situation where you look at Cargo not coming back and think like, well, what are they even doing? You know?
Right.
So there's some stuff. There are some things, man. Yeah. Some stuff to consider.
Yep.
So those are the big names in free agency. A couple more things we wanted to get to before we got out of here. We had a question into the old Ask PDP inbox quite some time ago, actually, in which we were posed the query from one of our longtime pals, especially this season, and one of our international bureau chiefs, in which we were we were asked to explain war. And this is from Chris Finlay, who is our buddy on the Isle of Man, the British Isle of Man. Wins above replacement, the stat war. And Anthony, being our stats guru, fire away. We forgot to address this last week, and I wanted to make sure that we got on it for Chris, because it's a very fascinating stat, and I think one that tells a really good tale about baseball players, and fire away.
War, what is it good for?
Absolutely nothing. Huh! Say it again.
Say it again. So, war is an acronym for wins above replacement. And basically, it is a new school metric, Chris, where it's kind of the dividing line right now between the new school and the old school. And guys who really adhere to it believe that it is a very comprehensive tool that can wrap up a player's performance in a lot of different areas, offense, defense, base running, fielding, whatever, in one fancy number. And obviously, the higher the number is, the better. And basically, how they got to this war, this metric, everybody has their different ways to find out the final number of war. Baseball Reference has their own. FanGraphs has their own. Stats, who I work for, LLC, they have their own. So no one's ever going to completely agree on which metric is the best, which one does it right. FanGraphs places a little bit more of an assessment on defense. Baseball Reference doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, how they do it, they gather all the data for every player in the league, and they make a baseline for what the average player will do. That is the replacement line or whatever. So anything you put over what an average player will give you in every one of these facets, that means everything up, you are better than the average in the league. So Mike Trout, what did Mike Trout end up this year? Mike Trout ended up being very, very good this year. So in the, let's just go to the leaderboard here. The league leader in wins above replacement based on stats metrics, who I work for, was Aaron Judge. He was worth 8.3 wins above replacement this year. Jose Altuve came in second at 7.9. The first Rocky on the list, Nolan Arenado, coming in at sixth at 6.7 wins above replacement. So basically what these guys can give you every day throughout the year is worth X amount of wins above what a replacement player could give you if given the same amount of at-bats as this player gave you throughout the year. So basically, if you didn't have this player in your lineup and you were given league average stats and replace his numbers with league average stats over the entire season, your team would finish with eight fewer wins in theory. That is what he was able to give you with his performance that year.
Makes sense. I like it.
So for the Rockies, let's see. The worst players on the Rockies this year in terms of negative wins above replacement, in terms of batting leaders, there were none, because Carlos Gonzalez was there for a while, but he made it back in September. He went from negative to 0.2 wins above replacement. Ian Desmond was 0.1 wins above replacement. So basically those guys were league average players this year. And you see the pretty rough numbers they gave the Rockies this year, the fact that they were considered league average, that's kind of where the baseline is. And it takes into account park factors as well, playing in Coors Field, et cetera. So the Rockies had four guys in their starting lineup with at least three wins above replacement this season. Nolan Arenado, 6.7, Charlie Blackman, 6.2, DJ at 3.5, and Trevor Story had an even three. And that's more impressive with Trevor Story, too, by the way, that he was able to struggle all season long, for the most part, offensively, and still give this team about three wins above replacement, because his defense was so good this year. I mean, that's, if you take a three win season from your shortstop, you're going to take that pretty much every single year, no matter how it comes that way.
There you go.
Now, if I could be totally stupid and wrong there, if you don't like what I said, if someone will come at me, that's fine. I'm not saying I'm like a sabermetrician at all.
Sabermagician.
I like it. I'm a saber magician. I like it. And I like doing this stuff, but I'm hardly a guy who's able to write the code and make all this stuff out. So this is something that was probably wrong. I probably did, but that's not my game.
It's a free podcast, like, you mongrels.
And it's a free podcast. Stop leaving us disappointing, like, messages.
Obviously
for
staged reviews. It's good.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, there was another one in which we got docked a star because a guy doesn't like the way that we talk about Donald Trump, and I will willingly wear that star to have lost that.
Well, so, yeah, I thought we cursed we jinxed the Broncos, right, and the Rockies.
Right.
Or no, we jinxed,
no,
the,
we
Rockies
jinxed the Rockies by talking bad about Trump, and then they still made the playoffs. And then
we jinxed them by talking bad about the Broncos.
Right. And the Broncos are playing well, and the Rockies made the
playoffs.
And then
we also jinxed the Broncos too, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost as though jinxes are not real, and if you believe in them, you're a child. Almost. It's almost like that. If I had to lay it out there in certain ways. Okay, so coming down to the end of this one, but a big thanks to all of you for hanging with us throughout September, throughout the playoff race, through our preview episode.
Even though we disappeared
in
September.
Even though we disappeared, apparently, despite our literal weekly episodes in September. Our playoff preview episode, which was a whole ton of fun, and I was really excited for Mike Farron to get a chance to work some postseason games, and honestly, genuinely, really wish Mike would have gotten a chance to do more. And that D-back staff, there are some really good people over there. I know they don't call the games, but next year, if you're an MLB TV person, I think Steve Berthiaume and Bob Brenly are fantastic together. The D-backs TV crew. Mike obviously is our good pal. And really, genuinely, again, I was legitimately pretty bummed that it was Paul Goldschmidt who was the one to strike out to end that game last night. I really like watching Paul Goldschmidt. I really like watching him. And that kind of sucked. Like, if it was, you know, Daniel Descalzo, nobody cares. Or if it was JD Martinez, nobody cares. Even if it was Chris Iannetta, who I always had a soft spot for, nobody cares. But Goldie deserves better. He deserves a chance at big things in his career. And, you know, that is a chance at big things. And he struck out. He didn't get the job done. And that's how baseball goes, and it sucks. But that is a team that I will be very interested to watch over the offseason, because like we talked about with Mike last year, or last week, coming into this season, that front office could have been forgiven for just blowing things up and starting over, because there were guys who were due a ton of money, Zach Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt among them, Goldie with a looming contract situation. They wrote it out, made it into the playoffs. Now they got a lot of decisions coming up as well. So the balance of power in the National League West seems like it's somewhat shifting. The Padres are not going to be this bad for long. That system is loaded. The Giants, I don't know what the hell the Giants are doing, but next year is an even year, so they're probably going to win the World Series. And the Dodgers are going to be the Dodgers again. But the Rockies are a team on the rise. The D-backs are a team with a bunch of question marks coming up, but a lot of talent as well on that roster as of right now. It's fun. This baseball is fun. Baseball is fun again, as Ryan Spielberg would have said.
Wee.
So that's good. Before we go, though, let's take a look at the playoff picture at large. And as we sit recording this on Tuesday afternoon, two teams have moved on to their respective league championship series. The Los Angeles Dodgers with a 3-0 sweep of the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Houston Astros with a 3-1 series victory over the Boston Red Sox. Two series remain to be decided. The New York Yankees and the Cleveland Indians will play a Game 5 in Cleveland, and the Washington Nationals and the Chicago Cubs are one game away from perhaps the Cubs moving on. The Cubs lead that series 2-1. Your thoughts on these final two DS series and what happens in the LCS and on? Because let's face it, we probably will have to disappear for October because Anthony and I work real jobs and we can't give you daily podcasts. And Anthony will be doing a whole bunch of postseason work.
Yeah, I mean, clearly as also a Cleveland Indians fan, I don't want to sit through them choking away another series again, because the World Series last year literally wrecked me for months.
Yeah.
Having to be there and work it and be there, it was awful. Yeah. And I never want to live through that again. And I'm doing that right now with because, you know, it sucks because everyone at Fox is very much rooting for the Yankees because they know what kind of ratings that will get them. They're doing it for purely a bottom line standpoint, and that's what happens when you work in sports television. You know what will be the best for the company, and Red Sox Yankees would have been great for the company.
Yeah.
If the Indians win, the executives have said at Fox that's still good. They can still sell the Indians after last year.
68-year title drought, fun, likable team. They made it all the way to Game 7. Right.
Yeah, you can very much sell that. And the game tomorrow is going to get massive ratings for Fox because there's nothing else against it at all in any sport, really.
It's an elimination game.
And it's an elimination game. The Yankees, it's going to be two former Cy Young Award winners. It's going to get a massive rating. So
it's the middle of the week.
Yeah, except Fox is going to be happy with tomorrow no matter what. But everyone there is rooting for the Yankees because they know what kind of rating that will bring. And so I'm very much on an island when it comes to this kind of stuff, because I'm there supposed to keep a level head with this kind of stuff. And I am just having to live through this again. I'm just getting deja vu, and it's not the good kind. So I'm hoping Corey Kluber doesn't have two bad starts in a row, which I think has probably never happened in his life. So I'm hoping he can come out tomorrow and the Indians can advance. The Nationals, they'll never win a playoff series in their entire lives. So they're pretty
I bummed. So badly want them to, but I very more badly want them not to. I want them to knock the Cubs out for obvious reasons. But
sure. Oh, God.
But
yeah,
I never want that meme to die. I never want it to go away. I want to be able to do the Washington Nationals have never won a playoff series for the rest of our lives.
Well, the thing is, and what's best is that if this game gets rained out today, which it might, they could pitch Strasburg tomorrow on fairly normal rest.
Yeah.
For Game 4 instead of Tanner Roark, which would give them a chance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Cubs, Dodgers again. God, who cares? I mean, everybody at Fox on the fifth floor, the executive floor, they just want they want Yankees, Dodgers. Like they could, they would just go from 6 to midnight if they get Yankees, Dodgers.
Yeah.
It's like boo.
Yep.
Boo.
Yeah. I could yeah. see it. Which would be fun. Be two fun teams, you know. I don't know. I think it's
there's nothing like the Yankees being back in the playoffs to remind everybody how insufferable Yankees fans are.
Yeah. You know, it's just so easy to hate, literally. I have nothing against the Astros. It's like the only team that I just really have. And I've loved watching that system be built and grow and graduate all these guys. And their Altuve is so much fun. And Correa is so much fun. And Bregman is so much fun.
Springer.
Yuli Gurriel.
Yeah.
I've been loving Yuli Gurriel on the international side for a decade plus since I saw him in the 06 WBC. Like, they're a very fun team. And everybody else is just like, no, there's something I want to make fun of you for. Cleveland, if not for Trevor Bauer, they would also be on that list. But I can't handle his MAGA.
But he's the only one.
He really
he's
is.
He's the only one that sucks
and
on that team.
They are the only team that has an Anthony Masterson lookalike, so I guess that cancels out Trevor Bauer.
Yes.
I'd cheer for them more because of that. I think it's going to be Astros-Dodgers. That's my pick.
Okay.
But I am hopeful that it is an Astros. I'm hopeful for a Cleveland Houston ALCS. Whoever comes out of that, I'm excited to watch play for a world championship. If it's a Dodgers Cubs NLCS, that doesn't do it for me at all.
Oh God.
I don't want to watch
we've
that
seen
again.
It.
Right.
We've been there before.
We've already had this
I don't
show.
Want any of those teams to win. Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah. We'll see. It's going to be fun, though.
Please.
It'll be a fun couple of weeks. However it goes, it'll be a fun next couple of weeks. And
well, you know what's funny? Like, even back in May, when our president of Fox Sports, Eric Shanks, came into the room during a whip around meeting one day, and we were talking to him, and we're like, hey, you know, who are you rooting for this year? Because we had the AL playoffs. Like, who are you rooting for this year? And he goes, oh, you know, like, Cleveland's still good. We can do Cleveland. Of course, New York and Boston, those are easy. Saying, you know, pretty much just anybody but Houston. And that's from a strictly fiscal perspective, a bottom line perspective. That is
Which,
the only reason.
That's
wasn't
how you have to think about
it. Team, whatever.
That's how you got to think about.
I mean,
it when you're
that's how you got when you're the president of Fox Sports.
Right.
That's how you got to think about.
Exactly.
It. I think it's a little different now. I think after the hurricane and everything, and the fact they have more marketable stars now. That was when they were on that crazy run at the beginning of the season when they couldn't lose at all. And they were clearly going to win the AL West.
Yeah.
So I think now the narrative might have shifted a bit. I think there's a sob story you can play there.
Yeah.
But no, oh God, just sucks to have to think of it that way.
Yeah. No, that's true. Oh man. Well, I will say one thing. And we've talked about this before on this show, but it's so much easier to be a fan of a bad team because you never have to feel the anxiety of playoff matchups, but God, it's so much more fun to feel that anxiety. It's so much easier to just be like, nah, my team sucks. I don't care. They're not going to do anything good anyway.
Yep.
But
so much easier.
But God, it's fun being in, even in the moments where I felt like I was going to throw up in the wild card game, still, it was like, where else would you rather be than in that spot, a one-run game going to the bottom of the eighth? You know, like, there's nothing. That's the whole point of all this. It's the whole point of everything. So I'll put it this way. I don't envy the anxiety and the stress of game five for you, but enjoy it.
Nope. I'll try.
all right, I guess that'll do it. We'll be back. We might, you know, we'll probably do like another playoff show or something. I don't know.
End of the World Series show or a free agent show or
we used
winter
to be,
meeting show.
Used to be the Rockies podcast. And now that we abandon you on the reg, our apologies for disappearing with our weekly episodes.
with a not at all like Russian bot.
so good. But seriously, a big thanks to everybody for joining in for the fun that we had during the wild card game on Twitter and elsewhere. And it's been so much fun getting a chance to share this season with you guys and especially to hear from everybody. I mean, we had, you know, we've got our buddy Christian Pallman, who was in Germany. He's in Munich and watching the game overnight. Chris Finlay, who was at the Isle of Man, he's watching that game. It's overnight there. Everybody, we've got Nickel, who is our guy in Austria. We've got
in Austria,
European
yeah.
fans who are watching the game and tweeting at us in the middle of the night, the early hours of the morning, who are getting involved, who are watching these games, having fun with us. And that's not even – that's the just the extension of our family. And for everybody who's been around this podcast since the beginning – the Denver area, coast to coast, nationwide. We've got friends in Australia. We've got people in Canada. We've got people we've heard from in Latin America.
New Zealand.
We've had so many fans and so much fun. So many people who love this team who have gotten involved and have gotten in touch. And we've gotten a chance to make some friendships with. And that has been so much fun. Hopefully, this is the start of big things. Just over the last 7 days, we've had almost 1,700 listens to last week's episode. And that is outside of the scope of the day in which we launched it. And I think we had about 1,500 listens that day. So we've had like 3,000 listens to that episode alone. And it's just been so much fun getting a chance to go through this with all you guys. And hopefully next year, this is an episode that we're doing on October 10th, talking about the Rockies moving on to the NLCS. And maybe it will be. And you know what? For the first time since we started this show 4 years ago, we can say that, and it feels like a distinct and legitimate possibility, and that is pretty damn cool.
Woo!
Woo! Woo!
Hooray!
Woo! Used to be the Rockies podcast, we did. And hopefully one day we will regain your trust as the Rockies podcast. But you can get in touch with us all off season long. We're at Purple Dinocast on Twitter. Purple Dinosaur Podcast at gmail.com is the email address. I'm Tyler Mon. He is at Master Tones. And that's going to do it. Any parting thoughts?
Go Rockies.
Hey, enjoy it wherever you go for the World Series, wherever it is. Enjoy it. Wouldn't that suck for you if
we'll
it ended
see.
Up in LA though? Like you wouldn't. Or would that be
I'm
nicer?
Sure be, honestly, I'm not sure. I'm not doing Long Beach State this year, so I'm not going to be like immediately on the road once again once the baseball season ends. So that's going to be kind of nice, but I don't know. I think it'd be nice to see my wife.
Oh man, apologize to her.
Remember Borat?
Remember
my wife?
We made,
get it?
We made very good jokes about that at Anthony's wedding. My wife, tell your wife that I'm sorry for piling on her team losing last night.
Yeah,
sorry.
She was like, "Did you write these tweets on the D-backs?" I was like, "No, I did not."
Whoops, sorry. Wah, wah. Love you, Nicole. At least it gave us a chance to exchange cute, sad puppy gifts. So that was good.
Yes, it did.
All right. He's Anthony Masterson. I'm Tyler Mon. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Love you. Bye.